one unique thing about Country Club Plaza, or as locals know it, the Plaza, is that it often allows us to be tourists in our own town. You never know who you might see in this enclave of Mediterranean-style edifices. Who you might meet. A Chiefs player, a Royals player, Mayor Sly James, or Central Standard's new producer, Matthew Long Middleton, fresh from New York. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, the first installment of an ongoing celebration and exploration and survey of Kansas City neighborhoods. It's aptly titled Corner to Corner. Join us in the Plaza, or for you more discriminating Plaza dwellers, the South or West Plaza. Whatever direction you're going in, we'd like to hear from you about your Plaza experiences. Covering all corners on Central Standard after this hour's NPR News.
Hello, Kansas City. I'm Matthew Law Middleton, the new producer for Central Standard. I just moved here from Brooklyn, New York, for the incredible privilege of this job at KCUR. As I've been composing ideas for Central Standard, it occurred to me that one of the things that had me so excited about moving to Kansas City is the sense I got that there are distinct neighborhoods here, in a way that some other cities lack. I decided I wanted to discover as much as I can about these neighborhoods, and then I realized perhaps there are things that I would uncover that maybe even the natives don't know. So I started with the Plaza, partly because it's so architecturally out of place with everything around it. I found myself wondering, how did this bizarre place get here? And after calling around, I was directed to Bill Worley, a historian who's written several books on the Plaza. He's an instructor of history at the Metropolitan Community Colleges of Kansas City, and I joined him on a walking tour of the Plaza just 2 weeks ago. But before we start, Kansas City, we want to hear from you about your experiences of the Plaza. What about this neighborhood do you love? What about it needs changing? Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888, or email us on centralstandard@kcur.org. As Bill and I talked, it quickly became clear that there is one man responsible for the Plaza, J.C. Nichols, and his dream is the reality we now reside in.
J.C. Nichols was a Johnson County native, grew up in the area of Olathe, initially on a farm outside of town, but his father worked eventually at the Grange store in downtown Olathe. And J.C. Nichols graduated from Olathe High School as the valedictorian. And then he went to the University of Kansas and graduated as, in those days they had valedictorians. He was also the valedictorian there. Got a scholarship for 1 year to go to Harvard. He intended to go into law school. But while at Harvard, as he told the story anyway, he got interested in terms of the ideas of land development and making income off of developing land, especially for residential use. So he came back to Kansas City, and initially was a partner with some lawyers from Kansas City, Kansas. And so his very first residential area was off Quindaro Boulevard in Kansas City, Kansas in 1903. But 2 years later, using money borrowed really from his father and from farmers that his father knew and out in Johnson County, Nichols bought land south of where we are now at the Plaza, and began with 10 acres of land in 1905. And by 1908, between some purchases with borrowed money and then the gaining of some investors, as it turns out, especially people who were active on the Kansas City Board of Trade, he was able to accumulate gain control of 1,000 acres of land, all of it at that time south of where the Plaza is located. And he began calling it in that year of 1908 the Country Club District because it surrounded what was then the Kansas City Country Club, what is today Luce Park. J.C. Nichols went on to a very extensive career in real estate. He probably was one of the most successful land developers in the United States in the period from before World War I until his death in 1950. There are some people such as the Levitts in New York who built Levittown who have certainly gained more notoriety But in fact, Nichols was able to put together more land than the Levitts were able to put together at Hempstead out on Long Island for what became Levittown.
And what kind of man was he?
Well, he was a very energetic individual. He is usually described as being somewhat nervous. I have a picture in the book that I wrote about him in which he's sitting at a desk with a telephone in one hand and a cigarette in the other. And probably both of those things are very good symbols of J.C. Nichols. The telephone in the sense that he did a great deal of his work making contact with people, making connections with people, and was the quintessential salesman in that respect. The cigarette from the standpoint that he ran on nervous energy a great deal of the time and was a tremendous chain smoker. I've had it described to me that he could carry on a conversation in his office. He had a very large desk, and he would walk around the desk, and he would be able to keep four cigarettes going, one on each corner of the desk in an ashtray, keeping all four going at the same time. Now, that to me would be the essence of a chain smoker. And sadly, it was the smoking that caused his death when he was 70 years old in 1950, because he died of throat cancer at that point. But he was a guy who put things together. He put people together. He put land together. He put ideas together in terms of how the land would be laid out for residential purposes. He was probably not actually a tremendous original thinker, but he was a great synthetic thinker in that he could pull things together and do them in ways that people hadn't necessarily thought of, or they had thought of certain parts of it, and he would put that together with an idea that he got from somewhere else and make it all work.
We started our conversation by the J.C. Nichols Fountain at the corner of Nichols Parkway and Emmanuel Cleaver Boulevard, one of the busiest intersections in Kansas City. And with the buzz of the traffic, it was hard to imagine what had been there before.
300 years ago, this was Osage territory, and where we are standing and where the J.C. Nichols Fountain is located was literally a creek bed. It was a creek that flowed out of Westport and then into Brush Creek, and then from there flowed to the east. At some time in the 19th century, that became known as Mill Creek because there was a grist mill upstream a bit in near Westport, or what would be today kind of downtown Westport, that would have given it the name from that standpoint. But this would have been an area that the Osage would have utilized for trapping animals. They were already, by the 1700s, well engaged in a fur trading business with the French that then gradually became taken over by the American interests. And in the 19th century, was primarily an American business. We have a remnant in the northeastern part of Jackson County at Fort Osage that really recognizes that particular part of our history. We don't know precisely that, and certainly there's not a documented campsite near here, but the Osage moved around a good deal. They were the primary traders south of the Missouri River, all across what is today the state of Missouri and well into the state of Kansas.
We walked west into the heart of the plaza, passing the P.F. Chang's living in the imitated skin of a Moorish tower. As we talked, the years of plaza history quickly passed to when Nichols arrived and single-handedly transformed this land by the creek.
The east end of the plaza, where Cheesecake Factory and some of the other stores and restaurants are located, was at one time subdivided by a competing developer into a residential area that they couldn't sell in Kansas City because people understood that it was an area that flooded frequently. So they sold it out of town, advertising in newspapers, mail order, you might say. And that was one of the reasons why when Nichols was putting together the land, he actually had to have one of his people go around the country to buy up quietly, or as quietly as he could, these little individual pieces of land that the competing developer, whose name was George Law, had sold off in that fashion. Now, interestingly, It is on Law's plat, which is a legal document, and the design of his residential subdivision that never came into existence, that the name Country Club Plaza first appears. In other words, Nichols, while he had the Country Club District, had never used the term Country Club Plaza until he individually bought up those pieces of land.
So when did people move here and why?
Well, the transformation really probably began in the 1890s when the Kansas City Country Club, which had been founded originally as the Hyde Park Country Club in Midtown, near what is today the small park known as Hyde Park, between the pathways of the two directions of Gillum Road, from 36th to 39th Street. But that in the 1890s, they moved out to some land owned by a gentleman named Hugh Ward, and he leased that to them for a period of time, and they continued to use it then from 1896 until 1926 as the Country Club of Kansas City. That began to attract a number of people to out to the area. The second thing that happened is that in right about the beginning of the 20th century, a neighbor, if you will, by the name of William Rockhill Nelson, who had built his home in the 1880s and then continued to add on to it at the site of what is today the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art, Mr. Nelson began to subdivide his area for larger homes. And so even before Nichols began to move in that direction in the latter part of the first decade of the 20th century, Nelson was kind of pioneering that. And at certain points, I've run across evidence that Nichols really was rather consciously, again, using an idea that someone else had developed, taking it several steps further, and really then developing the residential area. And then finally, by the time we get to the early 1920s, this commercial area along with it.
Bill and I turned north, up a steep hill with small homes and apartments on either side. There I learned that the plaza is really a story of three neighborhoods with different but conjoined histories.
But the thing about that I think most people don't recognize as far as the plaza is concerned is that it is intended to be a mixture of uses from the retail to the office building to the residential apartments to the condominiums and then in close proximity very large homes. Also the fact that, especially on its north side, it has an existing or pre-existing neighborhood that really provided a residential area for many of the servants who worked in the residential area on the south side of the plaza. So people in Steptoe, in many cases, wound up working for some of the folks who had the houses on Sunset Hill, with a plaza in between.
Were there contentions between these neighborhoods?
Well, not entirely. It was probably more of a symbiotic kind of thing in that each depended on the other in a variety of ways. Sadly, in reality, until the 1970s and beyond, folks from Steptoe neighborhood would not have been generally welcome to have shopped on the plaza. And that was true as far as African-Americans in general. There was a general, not legal discriminatory attitude, but an actual discriminatory attitude that would have discouraged shopping. Now, many of them might have worked in various situations, but not would not have been here as shoppers at that point. But the fact is, both neighborhoods tended to need the other one. And as it turns out, the plaza is kind of in between as far as that's concerned. It, in some ways, is the glue that holds, if you will, Steptoe and Sunset Hill together, as well as holding them apart.
Are there any stories between Nichols and the people of Steptoe, or were there no people up in Steptoe at that
Steptoe
time?
Actually was occupied and as a residential neighborhood well before the plaza was here. From the standpoint of Nichols, it is probably most accurate to say that he kind of ignored the fact that Steptoe was there. That was not something that he would have pointed out to people who were wanting to rent the more upscale apartments that began to ring the Plaza in the 1920s or other folks. Nichols, in his own residential areas, was well known to have included racially restrictive covenants that prohibited the sale or occupancy of his residential areas by Negroes, was the term used in the legal documents in that period. Now, those were declared to be unenforceable at law in 1948 by the United States Supreme Court. Certainly, there's been a somewhat increased number of African Americans who would be living in the Nichols residential neighborhoods. But that's been a fairly slow process. And sadly, what's happening with Steptoe at this point, and it probably has more to do with the encroachment by St. Luke's than it does with any encroachment directly from the plaza, but there's been a lot of land bought up, and St. Luke's has largely expanded to the west into what was the former Steptoe neighborhood. And also because of its proximity to the plaza, we've seen what's called a gentrification pattern develop. The properties become more valuable. People buy them up and in some cases put in apartments, or they put in not so much larger houses. This is not, Steptoe has never been a large house area like Sunset Hill on the other side of the plaza. But nonetheless, you do have changes in the property uses. This used to be all where we're walking now, up Pennsylvania here, north of 47th Street. What we see are lines of apartments, and some of them high-rise units, some of them three-story walk-ups. But they're basically all replacing what were single-family houses that we'll run into in the next block. And that would be a little more typical at one time. Now, the Steptoe neighborhood gained its name from the name of one of the streets, which is today known as 43rd Terrace. But it was originally on all street maps and such known as Steptoe Street. So the neighborhood basically took its name from that. One of the times that the plaza figured fairly significantly as far as the tensions of the city, if you will, are concerned, was in 1968. Following the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, there was a riot in Kansas City. It did not center on the plaza, but part of the reason it did not is because the National Guard came in literally with tanks on the east side of the plaza, and they were not going to allow any kind of problems to penetrate their barrier there. And there are some photographs that were in the Kansas City Star at the time that demonstrated that. You could see the tanks and then the plaza stores behind it. The riot itself was very heavily along Prospect Avenue, which is about a mile to the east of the plaza as far as its location. For Kansas City, it was the most extensive race riot in the history of the city, and itself a marker of change as far as the city was concerned. This was in 1968, and today the plaza is by far the most open and inclusive and diverse in terms of both clientele, shopkeepers, employees, that it has ever been. But that has taken an amount of time.
Then we travel back down the hill into the heart of the plaza, passing a group of caroling children and holiday shoppers smiling in a cold afternoon sun.
What are some of the most dramatic changes that you've seen, the most positive and then the most negative?
The most significant change that's happened, of course, is the ownership of the site. It is no longer owned by a Kansas City corporation, which was a family corporation, the Nichols Company. That change took place right at the beginning of the 21st century, and it's a little hard for an outside entity to have the same feel and commitment to it that the Nichols Company did, whether it was under J.C. or his son Miller.
How do you see that impact?
Well, they used to own, of course, a number of neighborhood shopping areas, including Brookside and such, and they've sold off basically everything else but the plaza. The other part of it is that, for example, we're walking along 41st Street here and across from Fogo de Chao. The tower that you see there, which is fairly clearly a little newer than some of the rest of the building, that's a personal gift of Miller Nichols. The company didn't pay for it. Miller paid for it. It's a structure that, from a commercial standpoint, is not going to make anybody any money, but it provides a focal point for this particular portion of the plaza that would not have existed otherwise. It is it uses the Spanish theme in terms of it appearing like a church tower in a Spanish area. It has some very distinctive mosaic work behind the clock that faces three of the sides that, again, Mr. Nichols commissioned specifically for this location. It includes some stained glass work at various levels and has a wonderful little weather vane at the top. All of these are features that, again, commercially don't make any sense, but Mr. Nichols was interested in making sure that this would be a really attractive area. Now, quite honestly, if you look right across the street behind it, that's a parking garage on top of a restaurant and some shops. And while it's sort of disguised, it's actually not a terribly attractive building at all. And Miller Nichols presided over the construction of that building as well. So, but it was earlier than the tower on Fogo de Chao, so maybe he was trying to make up for it. I'm not sure. But.
So when he donated that building, was it after he had any commercial interest in the area?
It was very late in the period. The planning went on while he was still a major shareholder in the company. The actual completion may have been right at the time of the sale of the company to Highwoods, either right before or right after. But again, from his standpoint, he viewed that as something that was just necessary to kind of finish off this particular section of the plaza. And it does provide another tower. There are a series of these along 47th Street here, and it provides another kind of way of doing exactly that. And
do you think he was interested in creating a community, or do you think he was interested in making money?
Both. This goes to J.C. and Miller, his son. There's no question that there's a desire to make money. That was a goal from the outset. But secondly, there was always the goal of creating an area that people would want to live in. J.C. Nichols, late in his life, called it planning for permanence. And what he meant by that was he wanted to create neighborhoods, and including the plaza as a neighborhood, that would last for literally generations. And since there are areas in the Country Club District that are now more than 100 years old, and the plaza itself is coming up on 100 years within, over time in the next decade, I think we'd have to say that he's probably succeeded at that far better than most folks who were in that line of work.
Why is it important to know anything about the plaza? Why not just come here and shop?
Well, because there's so much to enjoy in addition to the shopping. And, for example, one of the things that I tell people, I do tours of the plaza from time to time, and one of the things I tell people is always look up, because the decorative features of the buildings quite often are really quite spectacular. But we miss them because we're looking down, or we're paying attention to, who's on the roadway or what have you, or the sidewalk. And that all is necessary. But the looking up and seeing what else is there, I think lends a great deal more enjoyment to a visit to the plaza. And that's certainly something that does make it different from the standard shopping center, whether it be a lifestyle center or an enclosed mall today.
And we're back live on Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. That was Central Standard producer Matthew Long Middleton telling us about his jaunt around the plaza, one of Kansas City's most distinguished and continually evolving enclaves. When we return, more discussions about the plaza and what it means to our community. Kansas City, what does the plaza mean to you? The bright potential of the city, or does it tell another story to you of exclusivity? How do you view the plaza as a neighborhood? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also contact us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is also an option, and you can tweet us at KCURCST. Central Standard returns in just a moment. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We continue now with our first in a series of the first live show of 2013. Corner to Corner is what we're calling our series, a look at Kansas City's neighborhoods. Today, the plaza. And joining us now is Bill Worley, a plaza historian. Welcome to Central Standard, Mr. Worley.
Good to be here.
And Keith Spare, South Plaza Neighborhood Association president. Welcome
to Central Standard. Thank you. Good to be here.
Kansas City, what does the plaza mean to you? The bright potential of the city, or does it tell another story of exclusivity or race and class differences? How do you view the plaza as a neighborhood, Kansas City? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Join the conversation also at centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is also an option, and you can tweet us at KCURCST. What do you think of the plaza? Now, you're both fans of the plaza, obviously, Bill Worley, plaza historian, and Keith Spare, South Plaza Neighborhood Association president. But to many, the plaza represents sort of a velvet rope, that shining oasis on a hill, almost a sort of emerald city with curfew controversies of years gone by. How does the plaza shape up now in terms of a dialogue about race and class in this city, Bill Worley?
Well, as I walk the plaza, which I do with some frequency, I don't live right next door, but almost within walking distance, I see the plaza today as probably at its most diverse that it's ever been in terms of who's out walking, especially on a nice day. The Saturday before Christmas was an example of that. And it was an interesting variety of folks in terms of race and ethnicity. Now, when it came to income levels, everybody was reasonably well dressed. You have the folks who are there, asking for your money and such, and the Hare Krishnas, as we heard a little earlier, and all. But it the area where the plaza is less diverse, I think, today than much of the rest of our area. Is in the area of income levels from that standpoint. And, of course, that would apply to a significant degree to the residential areas around it, although there's more diversity in the residential areas immediately around the plaza than most people know. And our friend Keith Spare here can fill us in on that.
Yeah, Keith, you can speak to that. The South Plaza is a mix of students from UMKC, international students from UMKC. I was once a resident of the South Plaza myself, so the joke was that's where they put all of the out-of-town black people. So this was meant to be an exclusive from the outset. So how has the South Plaza sort of informed that discussion about diversity?
Of course, I see it as a resident of 20-some years. And when I first moved in the neighborhood, I went to my next-door neighbor who's since deceased and asked her about the neighborhood. And she had the most charming statement. She says, well, you know, there's some Mexicans in the neighbors. There's some African-Americans. There's some people who lived here all their lives. There are some new families, and of course, there's some gay people, and they really raise the property values. There was not a mention of the students, but there are quite a few students who do live in the neighborhood. We have banners that represent kind of almost the plaza as well as our neighborhood that include everything from single family to duplex, fourplex, and high rise. And then if you really look close, there's the plaza itself with its towers and businesses in the neighborhood. And We're one of the few neighborhood associations whose membership includes not only homeowners, but renters and businesses in the neighborhood. And we've pretty much enjoyed that relationship. You were talking about people on the plaza. We have the jogging trail across the street.
The trolley trail. Yeah.
And I would liken it to the trolley track trail. As the trail has become more traveled, we see people there day and night. And I was around when the plaza almost died and there was nobody. And it was a very sad business enterprise. We really, I think we suffered and grieved over the changes, because the changes went from some companies and businesses we dearly loved, a grocery store, a pharmacy that had become a part of the community for a long time, to actually a much more thriving economic adventure.
It's very interesting that you say the plaza almost died. Tell us about what happened at the stay of execution, so to speak, with the plaza.
Well, I'm not sure that that's when Highwoods actually bought it or when the transition began the most, but I do remember that it was more dangerous. There were more problems on the street. There didn't seem to be the investment in the properties that there is now. And there was just a sense of also a lot of change, I think, in the businesses that were actually there from time to time. And it stabilized a great deal.
816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888 to get on the discussion about the plaza. Kansas City, I know you have opinions one way or another about the plaza. Join the conversation. We happen to be talking about the plaza today on Central Standard. Bill Worley, you're a plaza historian. Talk about the differences within the neighborhood itself. What's the difference, say, between Keith Sparrow's South Plaza and if you live by the West Plaza where some of the Sporting KC players live? Are there friendly rivalries other than topography? What's the sort of different characteristics of these neighborhoods within the neighborhood?
Well, what you have is a group of neighborhoods that coexist but don't necessarily interact with each other very much. You left out one area, which would be the Sunset Hill area that's west
right.
of Warnell
right.
And southwest of the plaza, which is a very upscale neighborhood. As you say, West Plaza has developed in a variety of ways with about, I would say, much the same diversity as South Plaza, but its own personality from that standpoint. I think with regard to the plaza itself, certainly the change in direction from largely locally owned stores to much more national chains can be dated from the plaza flood, which was 1977. And shortly after that, what had been the Woolworths, which was, of course, a national chain, but catered to a wide variety of folks, became Saks Fifth Avenue, which, of course, is no longer on the plaza. But on the other hand, that particular transition going from Woolworths to Saks, I think, probably characterized that particular change. But I think what Keith is getting at in terms of the period when the plaza was not real strong would be the late 80s and early 90s. There's a period in there when the leadership of the company was in some crisis, shall we say. This is prior to Highwoods, prior to that particular sale, and prior to the reorganization that had brought Barry Brady in as kind of an interim president, and then he became the manager for Highwoods for a decade after that. But those in the late 80s, early 90s, there was indeed not a disinvestment, but there was not much new investment going on.
And let's talk about Highwoods for a second, because the 80s and 90s are also a period where we start to see an outgrowth of malls in the mall culture, particularly the suburban malls with all of these sort of national retailers, these destination things with big parking lots and anchor tenants and stuff like that that draw traffic away from the city. And now the plaza, as we understand, was the nation's model for the mixed-use outdoor retail that we're seeing sprout up all over the country now. So then, Mr. Worley, why have planners not said, look what J.C. Nichols did over there by Brush Creek. Let's duplicate that around Kansas City's urban core with our own neighborhood character. What's happened?
The reality is that in many respects, developers around the country do this, but unconsciously. They don't really make the connection as far as the plaza is concerned. But the fact is that the model is there and has proven remarkably resilient over that period of time. Now, the Plaza itself in the 70s and 80s played with an indoor mall. The location where now the theaters are located, the Cinemark theaters, that was known as Seville Square for a period of time. And that was intended as kind of an indoor mall. It was actually a converted Sears store that had been built right after World War II.
Right. If you go in there, there's a Urban Outfitters and a noodle place inside and an escalator going up into the Cinemark Theater. So that's
right. There's a little continuation of the mall atmosphere, but it didn't work economically for them.
Keith?
Another interesting thing that happened was the UMKC Kills Our Neighborhoods event, in which...
Wow. that's harsh.
it was the single most powerful yard sign I've ever seen. I was involved with UMKC and neighborhoods for a long time, talking about the progress and growth for UMKC, which is a big part of the Plaza area, and had pretty much been convinced that UMKC was going to do what they wanted to when they wanted to. What happened was somebody came up with that slogan, and it caught on like wildfire, and two chancellors later, actually probably four chancellors later, we now have Leo Morton. We have the Volker Neighborhood Council, which is represented by all the councils of neighborhoods that live around the UMKC area.
And what's the consensus now?
We've actually worked to the point with the UMKC where they're not just looking at the city codes, they're following the city codes with their properties. The powers of the neighborhoods came together, but also the power of leadership has come together, and we're really listening to each other. The consequence has been that UMKC has gone on to build what was used to be the Twin Oaks, is now a very nice apartment complex and two dormitories. They put up a new student union. A lot of changes have happened. Interestingly enough, pretty much with the support and with the okay of the neighborhoods. The biggest one now is South Plaza, is we're in the conversation stage, almost ready to move forward, I hope, with a Whole Foods grocery store in the parking lot south of the original 51st Street Mall that J.C. Nichols started. And that's going to be pretty exciting. It'll be 150 new apartments, a student health center for UMKC. But it's also reminiscent. We've also got a project up on 51st and Main that's being done by the same company, Vantile Trust. And they worked with us very closely to make an acceptable neighborhood development. And we've had a history of doing that, which I think has become a part of the big strength of neighborhoods.
Let's go to Todd in North KC. Todd, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. I was just, I always like to hear conversations about the Plaza. My wife and I lived there the first year we were married, which has been almost 25 years ago. And at the time, it was still very much a neighborhood. There was a neighborhood drugstore, Bruce Smith Drugs. There was a neighborhood grocery store, Mule Box. We lived in the Victory Court apartments, which are one of the few that haven't been torn down and destroyed with new high-rises. So we enjoyed, driving by and thinking fondly of that time. But it's the changes have been far more commercial than I think are beneficial to residential neighborhoods. You could still walk and go pretty much to anything you needed at that time.
But now it's different, you think?
Yeah, I mean, you have a lot of upscale stores. You have a lot of shopping that's not just for everybody. It's not like you can run down to the corner and buy a pair of shoelaces and some aspirin on a Friday evening when you need to.
Certainly. Thank you, Todd, for your contribution to this conversation about the Plaza. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. This is the first in our series in the first live show of the year called Corner to Corner, a look at Kansas City's neighborhoods. Today, we're discussing the Plaza. Our guests are Bill Worley, a Plaza historian, and Keith Spare of the South Plaza Neighborhood Association. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can join the conversation via Central Standard at KCUR.org. Tweet us at KCURCST. Facebook is also an option. Let's go to John all the way up in Liberty. He wants to talk about the Plaza. John, welcome to Central Standard.
Well, good morning. My comments are similar to Todd. I'm a senior, and I don't find the Plaza that accessible. Like this morning, I'm parked outside of business in Liberty. I drove right up to it. We rarely go to the Plaza. If we want something of a little more upscale nature, we'll go to Zona Rosa, park right outside. My granddaughters go in and shop. So I find the Plaza works beautifully for younger people, but not so much for a senior like me.
Well, let's talk about that, John. Thank you for your contribution to the conversation about the Plaza here today on Central Standard. We have an influx, Keith Spare, of trendy national retailers. What has that done to the character of the Plaza itself? Recently, I was walking through Forever 21 just to stay out of the cold to get to the other side of the Plaza. And I'm in there, and I'm like, wow, this looks like a toy store. I don't understand. You know, I don't get it. I felt very old myself. What has this done? Forever 21, Urban Outfitters, Banana Republic, you know, what has that done?
Well, you know, I think what the Plaza has done today is they've got a combination of things which draw people from the outside and young people, as well as things that still draw us old timers. There's a lot of parking that sometimes people don't know about that's available for those of us who are a little more, I'm handicapped, bad knees and so forth, but so that you can walk out of the car and go into the restaurant or go into Barnes & Noble. So if you know the Plaza, it's really more accessible than a lot of people would think. But the vitality of the Plaza is probably because it's drawn in people from all strata. And that ends up being, I think, a secret for a lot of neighborhoods. Like South Plaza has the same thing. We've got more families on my street with children than we've had since I've been there. And that's exciting.
Joe Luis Maddox, a frequent contributor to the show content-wise and also a very loyal listener here in Kansas City. We'll be talking to him later in this series about the east side of Kansas City. He adds that he experienced suspicions and unwelcoming attitudes toward blacks or African-Americans or minorities in the 1960s. He remembers the police following him around when he came to the Plaza to shop. When I lived at the Plaza, in the South Plaza, I was perfectly cognizant that 40 or 45 years ago, I was not welcome. That's an interesting legacy to understand and to examine as we look at the Plaza going forward and we talk about the recent controversy over curfews, Bill Worley.
Well, at one time, this is during the 1968 riot, there were tanks.
Right.
That ringed the east side of the Plaza, and the tanks were all aimed toward the east side. And if that's not they never fired a shot, but that if that's not a symbolic kind of thing, I don't know what is. The reality is that there's no question at a certain level, the Plaza was in J.C. Nichols' mind built as a buffer to keep the city at bay to the south, because the Plaza was not certainly in Nichols' mind, something unto itself. It was intended to be organically a part of the residential areas that he was building to the south.
We're going to go to Maria in Kansas City, Missouri. Maria, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi.
Hello.
I am one of those original black families in the 60s and 70s.
Wow.
That were living at right on 43rd Terrace, that I'm now finding that was called Steptoe. The Plaza was literally our playground, our backyard. I went to UMKC, so I get and have seen all of that and how they kind of moved in, but I, yes, want to agree or piggyback on with, yes, J.C. Nichols was a part of that encroachment and moving in and kind of, but more so St. Luke's Hospital was doing more of that and acquiring properties little bit by little bit and definitely capitalizing on the black community, not having a whole lot of money, so very easily tempted with a big dollar figure to get them to move out in exchange for their property, you know, whatever price tag that they wanted to slap on it. And yes, it was very attractive and made that process, sped that up much faster. As well as I remember the riots, the time of the riots and the National Guard and all that stuff coming in. And I was at school, Catholic school in the Westport area at the time, and remembering how the principal had announced over the PA that the school was being let out. And mind you, a little bit more backstory there. My family was usually the only black family in the school, so I was always the only black person in my classroom. And so they were calling parents and letting parents know to come and pick your kids up and stuff because of all the and the scare and the fear and everything. And you just knew that, we all need to get home. We all need to get home. And because
Maria,
I was walking distance.
Maria, we need to let Bill Worley respond. To what you're saying. And Bill Worley, chime in. Walt Bodine, my legendary predecessor here, describes truce as the Berlin Wall. You talk about the tanks aiming at the East Side during these riots. I often listen to his broadcast of the King riots, very legendary broadcasts. Talk about this.
Well, the interesting thing is the tanks in this case were on the east side of the plaza, meaning they were on J.C. Nichols Parkway on either side of 47th Street at that point. But the caller makes an excellent point with regard to the dynamics with regard on St. Luke's. St. Luke's is an old resident of the area. They actually moved out of the Quality Hill area downtown in the mid-1920s, just as Nichols was beginning to build the plaza. It was not something that Nichols initiated, but he certainly welcomed in a variety of ways. But certainly from the 1960s forward, as St. Luke's has expanded into the huge monolith that it is today, because if you look at the footprint of St. Luke's, it is roughly equal to the footprint of the plaza. And the observation the caller made with regard to this that Maria was talking about is that, yes, St. Luke's took advantage of the relatively less expensive property to the west, and at this point essentially cover all the way over to Broadway and a bit west of Broadway in terms of some of their medical office buildings that are a part of that. And so, ironically, it has been St. Luke's that has probably taken out Steptoe as a neighborhood more than the plaza has.
And we're going to come to Keith Spare in a minute. Keith Spare, before we go to the phones, Keith Spare, it's sort of a six on one hand, half a dozen on the other bittersweet thing, because you got Whole Foods coming. That's needed. You got Trader Joe's up the street. You have Brooks Brothers. You have all of these national retailers that bring in upscale clientele and bring in international visitors who say, oh my God, this is amazing. Starbucks is there. So you're bringing traffic, you're bringing economic empowerment and growth to the neighborhood, but at the same time, you're losing a local character and local flavor.
It's always how interesting to me how success comes with a cost. With all these powerful entities around you, UMKC, St. Luke's, and others, we've also got powerful neighborhoods. And what neighborhoods do when they're powerful is they also protect the neighborhoods to be comfortable and welcoming to the neighborhoods. So, and what we've done in the last 20 years that I've been involved, we've been involved in the Jefferson Project, the Kirkwood Project, the UMKC's projects, as well as the new apartment buildings and property on 51st Street and now Whole Foods. We've worked continually to make those acceptable to the most they could be with the neighborhood and the least damaging. But they also make the properties more expensive.
They do.
They make it harder for those of us who live there to continue to afford the taxes. They make it more difficult for families who want to buy in because, at least in South Plaza, our property values have never fluctuated. They've only gone up.
Let's go to Teresa in Westwood Park. Teresa, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, Javelani. I really appreciate you taking my call, and I'll be as succinct as I can. My first point is, and this isn't meant disparagingly at all, but I call the Truth line the Truth Dixon line.
Wow.
And that is exactly what it is. I have friends that come to the city and say it is the most segregated city they've seen, even including places in the South today. I lived on the plaza for 18 years in an apartment, various apartments, the Poet Building. Loved it, loved it, loved it. And I still live. I bought a house 12 years ago in Westwood Park, which is about six blocks west of the plaza. I work part-time at a store in the plaza, and I can tell you quite honestly, we have very few black customers. The black people I see on the plaza are generally kids. They are not customers. They have no place to go unless they're in the movie theater. poverty is part of the problem, I think, down there. And I don't think the stores are certainly as nice. I'm from Topeka. We used to come up there to shop. I can name the stores: Hartzell, Swanson's, Wolf Brothers. There aren't really special stores there anymore. Most of them are chain stores, and I realize that's a sign of the times. But I have customers that come in our little store and say, the stores you have down here are really no different from any store I can find at any mall. For the most part, not all. There used to be a post office, a florist, a dry cleaner. There was a bowling alley where my brothers would bowl when we would come up and the girls would shop. It's a very different place. I wish it was more welcoming to people of all races. I still do not think it is. I don't see a lot of, I mean, I see some, quite honestly, some professional, clearly middle or upper class black people or people of other nationalities and ethnicities shopping there. And I don't think it's anything the Plaza has done to exclude them. I don't think they feel, I hope they don't feel unwelcome there.
Thank you, Teresa, for your contribution to the conversation. We have a few moments here left. What things should we look out for in this neighborhood going forward, Bill Worley? And we'll let Keith Spear chime in with what time we got left.
Well, I think the key thing with regard to the Plaza, and this last caller alluded to this, one of the realities is that if you're running a shopping center, which is what the Plaza is after all, you have to find tenants. Tenants who can pay. And at this point, one of the realities in the United States is that it's the chain stores that can do that. Local companies, you know, the largest local company on the Plaza is Halls. And, of course, that is an offshoot of Hallmark. But other than that, you have a few small shops. That's going to continue. It's going to be probably even more national chains and national restaurants. In that respect, I would wish it were different. I don't see it how it's going to be, however.
I think in the neighborhood, what you're going to continue to see is cooperation. We have a meeting every quarter that we have 40 people in, and it's you're going to see the neighborhoods continue to work with the community to make the best community we can. And we got places to go and changes to make.
Keith Spear is the voice you just heard. We've also had Bill Worley. They're the Plaza Neighborhood Association president and Plaza historian, respectively. Tune in tomorrow as Corner to Corner, our series continues, and we hit the Northeast with an exploration of a corner of KC beyond downtown and east of City Market. You can find our podcast archives and a lot more at kcur.org. Check out the Central Standard page on Facebook as well. Matthew Long Middleton is Central Standard's producer. Up to Date is next with the author of Call Me Dad, Not Dude. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Happy New Year, Kansas City. Enjoy your day.